Brothers and sisters, my name is Michael Bannock. I'm from Fulton, Missouri. Today is Sabbath, May 10th, 2014. The title of my remarks is The Second Commandment of Ten. Some time ago, I made up my mind that if I have occasion and the grace to speak before the Brotherhood, I'll be focusing on commandments. And so this is the second one. In the previous one, we talked about worshiping Yahweh and only Yahweh. I don't expect you to remember everything I said. I don't think I'm that important, but one important conclusion is the outcome of my presentation is that if we're not worshiping Yahweh, we're actually worshiping ourselves. Because even if we're worshiping some foreign deity, we're going to worship some God that is appealing to us, that we kind of like that God. And the pagans did this. They had a deity for everything, anything they wanted. Yeah, let's get something straight. When I use the word G-O-D, it's in reference to false deities or what somebody else said. But I have no use for common titles in my worship, and I hope to cover that if I'm allowed to get to the third commandment. Here's an outline of what you'll hear today. Opening remarks, latent idolatry, boy meets girl idolatry, idols in the heart, daily idolatry versus Yahweh's provision. There's no way you can cover this subject in one little presentation. But I can stimulate thought and I can challenge you. Here's the second commandment, taken from Exodus 20, verse 4 to 6. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them, for I, Yahweh the Elohim, am a jealous El, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation of them that hate me, and showing mercy unto the thousands of them that love me and keep my commandments. Yes, this business about him being a jealous El. I know what it is to experience jealousy. Based on what I see around me, he must be fuming with jealousy as of late. First, my opening remarks. It's very hard to talk about specifics in a sermon about the commandments. I'm pretty convicted that it's easy to come up here and talk about broad principles, ideas, concepts, trends. But to talk about something specific may require that you, my friends, will wind up in the line of fire. I suppose it would be easy to get on I'm not saying the broadcast ministry is easy now, but it would be much easier to get on a TV and blast those words out to a faceless audience who I don't know and they don't know me. In fact, they might listen to me better because a prophet is without honor in his own country. Some guy on the TV, he comes across as that expert from afar. But I'm convinced that in a live service like this or at the feast, it's hard to talk about specifics because the specifics may be at play among us. You might think, oh, he wrote that, he included that for me. You know, we have a relationship to maintain. I'd like above all for you to take these things as food for thought, challenging. Certainly we want to come here and be challenged, don't we? We want to be pointed higher. We want to be provoked to go deeper. Let us provoke one another to good works, it is written. As part of my opening remarks, I want to address the question, are all images bad? There are some brethren who've been convicted about this. I go gently with them because they may be hitting some celestial high note that I can't reach. But there's some people who believe all pictures, all images are bad. Well, in the ancient Hebrew alphabet, all the letters were pictures. And it was impossible to write Yahweh's name without making a picture of a hand, a window, and a nail or a hook. Now that first letter, Yod, means hand. It kind of looks like a hand. It kind of looks, you'll see what it looks like to me. If you look at the visual, it looks like what when we had movie projectors in school, we'd stick our hands up and make a duck. It kind of looks like that there. The hay is interpreted as a window, but the word hay, as a letter, literally means, hey, look, behold. And finally, the wove can be a nail or a hook. There's some brethren who have observed, I think there's some truth to it, that yod-heh-wav-heh means hand, behold, nail, behold. It's kind of thought-provoking. You can do something similar with Yahshua's name if you remember that the sheen means sharp. So I conclude that pictures are okay. The question is which ones and in what way and all that. Let's talk a little bit about angelic images. I'm going to change that language in a moment. But the cherubs appear in the tabernacle design. Yahweh commanded Moses to create this box of the Ark of the Covenant, and it resided in the tabernacle. And on each side were two cherubs facing each other. The wings were either touching or almost touching. They were to be made of beaten gold. So these were images that were commanded by Yah. But you see, the cherubs are not actually angels. And this is an error in just terminology that's real popular. So I'm going to call this a word on images of spirit beings. The cherubs appear also in the curtains of the tabernacle design, if you look it up. But we don't know how many there were. Bunches of them? Were they all facing in different directions? Like on a shower curtain, you have flowers pointing in different directions? I don't know. All we have is artist conceptions. But these cherubs, singular it would be cherub, in Hebrew plural it would be cherubim. Let's put a yod mem at the end of it. The im means plural. So I'll either say cherubs or cherubim. But they have varying descriptions. If you look at the ones in Ezekiel, they look kind of different than what Moses was instructed to make for the tabernacle. But we know they have wings. But even the number of wings is in question. Now, the cherubim that we have in the tabernacle are instructed by divine ordinance. Modern art peddlers palm their stuff off to make a buck. They may think they're inspiring you, but there's some issues with images of angels I'd like you guys to think about very seriously. So often when I bring this subject up, the thing I'm dealing with is the effect on the viewer or the owner of it. In other words, well, I don't feel convicted about it, or I'm so inspired by these angels. You know, this is the kind of stuff you'll hear. Turns out cherubs are not angels. Now, I'm going to spend some time sorting through all this. Cherubs are not angels. They're not messengers. We don't talk to cherubim. They don't deal with us. They don't appear to us. They don't have any interaction with us at all. They only minister before Yahweh, or they minister in some holy context. Now, the seraphim, they also have wings. They have six wings. You'll find that in Isaiah 6. Seraphim stood above him. This is what Isaiah recorded. Each having six wings. With two of them he covered his face. With two he covered his feet. And with two he flew. But real angels, messengers, the real messengers that have appeared to men over time, they don't have wings. They look like men. I suppose they could look like women too. But not only is the Bible very consistent about the fact that angels, the messengers, have no wings. They look like ordinary people. They have brilliant garments. We know that. But those who've encountered angels, like in modern times, they will say, yeah, it was just a couple of guys. Now, why or when we don't promote and push and tell lots of stories about these things. Now, if you come to the feast or talk over lunch at fellowship time, you might hear a personal testimony about how somebody was saved by an angel at a very critical moment in time. I've talked to people who've experienced this, but none of them had wings. None of them. Angels appear in popular art with wings, even though Scripture shows them as men. So if you have angels around your space, what are you trying to achieve? A pagan art depicts Nike, the goddess of victory, as having wings, like an angel in popular art. So we're seeing here in this realm as a blend of ideas. Everybody calls them angels, but only when you start parsing it out and finding out what's going on where can you get specific. The spirit beings with the wings, they operate in Yahweh's realm. Let's see. We are warned against worshiping angels. Colossians 2:18 says, "Let no man beguile you of your reward in a voluntary humility and worshiping of angels." Note this, intruding into those things which he hath not seen, vainly puffed up by his fleshly mind. Some of these angel images you see around, they look like little babies. Now, it turns out that's part of pagan art too. I forget the name of them. I just saw it recently. But they're little naked babies, little nude babies with wings. And people think, oh yeah, that's angels too. Or maybe that's cherubim or something. But it's not. It's just another crazy idea coming forth from inside some guy's mind, describing something that he never saw. So let me have a word on images of spirit beings. Real angels look like human beings with no wings. We have no instruction to represent cherubs, seraphs, or angels in our own environment. Nike, the goddess of victory, is portrayed just like the angel images we see in popular art. If you insist on having images of winged creatures in your space, can you replicate the holy, set-apart environment in which the cherubim and seraphim operate? You think you're going to make, oh, I'm going to make a tabernacle or an Ark of the Covenant and I'll put them on there? What I'm seeing as I go about my life, as I see these images of angels just splashed here and there as though they have some validity. By the way, the winged creatures, I've never seen in the Bible anywhere where they had just one of them. They actually came in two or more at a time. I want to urge you, brothers, to be mindful of the sensibilities and conscience of those who come into your space. And now, if I may build on what Brother Bob said, do you really think Yahshua would have pictures of angels on the wall of his home or statues or things like that? Do you think Yahshua would have that kind of thing? I wonder about that. We're going to talk about latent idolatry. Well, you know, it's funny. I say it's latent yet pervasive. The word latent means that it's below the surface. It's kind of hidden. Yet at the same time, I'm claiming it's pervasive. Let me just say that the kind of idolatry I'll be talking about here is all over the place, but you may not notice it unless somebody brings it out. So today I'm going to indict Christian art, gag cartoons. Maybe you've seen these things where there's a cartoon frame and a big finger's coming out and pointing at some little guy looking up, as though the Almighty is pointing to him. Or about the hand of the Almighty. Our friends at the Adventist Church, I'm very fond of the Seventh-day Adventists, but they published a Bible with a globe on the cover, a giant hourglass nearby, and the hourglass is held by a giant hand. Whose hand is that? Who are we trying to kid? I mean, I don't know anybody who's got a hand that big except maybe one individual in the universe. Where do we get the license to do this sort of thing? About the religious literature and art, particularly in old Catholic churches, I'm telling you, some of that stuff looks like Xbox monsters or something. Having come from the Catholic tradition, their religious art is kind of hair-raising. I'm particularly concerned about images of the Almighty. He's typically pictured as an old man with a flaming white beard. He doesn't like this. And I know you might be thinking, well, it's just his hand, it's just his finger. I went to doing door-to-door evangelism with a group in Illinois many years ago. And the guy I was doing this with, he was handing out Jack Chick tracts. Now, maybe some of you don't know what Jack Chick tracts are. It's those little cartoon booklets to get saved. And Anyway, inside one of them, one of the final pages, was an illustration of the Almighty sitting on a giant throne and all these tiny little people down on the ground getting judged by him. Now, the face was whited out. There was no face, but it was a full body on a throne. And I said to the pastor, I said, I cannot in good conscience pass this out. He said, well, he said, think of the thousands of people who've been saved by the Jack Chick tracks. I thought, I was in no mood to argue. I thought, well, I can't name three people who've been saved by those silly cartoon booklets. And some of them look kind of silly. They're sort of a caricature. So does that make it okay? We can make pictures of Yahweh, just don't include the face, just white it out? Does that make it all right? In Deuteronomy 4:15, he clarifies this for us. Take ye therefore good heed unto yourselves, for you saw no manner of similitude on the day that Yahweh spake to you in Horeb out of the midst of the fire, lest you corrupt yourselves, and you make you a graven image, the similitude of any figure, the likeness of male or female. And I cut it off there because there's other things that he mentions, but I'm focusing right now on this desire to make a human form of him. He's not impressed with the smallness of your violation here. One of the hallmarks of the true ancient original religion is that we do not make images of the supreme being. Can't we have anything that's holy? Can't we have anything where we say, no, this is a no-fly zone? You know where you're going to find the image of Yahweh every single time? Is you're going to find it in his people. Yahshua told his disciples, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. When you are a reflection of Yahshua's character, and that's what the whole thing's about, is to develop Yahshua's character within you. You don't need images. Not only that, you'll find that you will prefer this rainbow of images you get from the sweet and beautiful people you meet in the household of faith. That's where you start to connect with Yahweh. That's how he wants us to know him, through his son, through his people, through his word. As soon as you try to crystallize that into an image, you limit him. You put him in a box. Okay, let's make something clear. I let the elders worry about doctrine. And I'm going to be putting some questions out here to challenge you guys. But no matter how much I try to crystallize this, I'm probably going to fall short. We're going to ask the question, can we make images of Yahshua? And one question I often ask is he worthy of worship? Those of you who are watching or listening through the media outreach are probably puzzled. Well, why would he ask a question like that? Because we understand in the Christian world, mainstream Christianity anyway, there's absolutely no question that Yahshua, in their minds, there's no question that Yahshua and the Father are equal and part of a co-equal Trinity. Those who are newcomers to this movement have to understand that we do not accept, handed to us at face value, mainstream Christian tradition. We study everything out. We weigh it carefully. Sometimes we'll analyze things down to an individual word. We have to. We've been handed so many distortions. And so it may seem like I'm splitting hairs here, but there's some important questions to be asked if you're going to have pictures of Yahshua in your space. In Revelations 5, 12 to 13, it says, saying with a loud voice, some characters in heaven, they say, worthy is the Lamb, that's Yahshua, that was slain to receive power and riches and wisdom and strength and honor and praise and blessing. And every creature which is in heaven and on the earth and under the earth and such as are in the sea and all that are in them, I heard saying, blessing and honor and praise and power be unto him that sits on the throne and unto the Lamb forever and ever. So now they're receiving this reverence together. So there's a reason why I'm asking, is Yahshua worthy of worship? I'm going to fine-tune this and say, let's analyze two specific verses, one I just read and another one from Revelation. And is he worthy of worship? I'm going to repeat the part from Revelation 5:12, saying with a loud voice, "Worthy is the Lamb that was slain to receive power and riches and wisdom and strength and honor and glory and blessing." It's clearly about the Messiah, Yahshua. Then in Revelation 7:12, it says, saying, "Amen, blessing and glory and wisdom and thanksgiving and honor and power and might be unto our Elohim forever and ever." Now, I've looked at these two verses side by side. I've carefully sorted the words. And I made a little chart here. I guess it's the engineer in me. In Revelation 5:12, Yahshua receives everything you see in the left-hand column. And in Revelation 7:12, our Elohim receives everything in the right-hand column. And they both receive blessing, glory, honor, power. Now, at one point, they both, one receives strength and the other is said to receive might, but they're the same word in the Greek, so that matches. And they are both to receive wisdom. But the place where they differ is Yahshua receives riches and our Elohim receives thanksgiving. Now remember, this book is a revelation. Is he worthy of worship? What we find in the scriptures and in our experience, our reverence for him approaches that of worship. But it's never exactly the same as what the Father gets. We're very comfortable singing about Yahshua, celebrating him. And you'll find in limited situations, people will cry out to him in the Bible. So here's the question I lay before you in the context of images. Is he worthy of worship? If he is, we shouldn't be making images of him, should we? Yahshua anticipated this issue. He said in John 5:23, that all men should honor the Son, even as they honor the Father. He that honoreth not the Son honoreth not the Father, which hath sent him. I looked it up, and the Greek word for honor means simply honor. There's no indication of worship there. Well, there's a lot more verses that speak to this subject, and I'm going to defer to the elders to thrash this all out. My question is, if Yahshua is worthy of worship, how can you make images of him? Now, I've put this question to Christian friends. And what they typically tell me is, well, they believe he's 100% divine, just like Yahweh, the Father. Let's keep something in mind. The scriptures say that when the entire plan of salvation is completed, Yahshua is going to get down off that throne and put himself in subjection to his Father. And it's going to be that way forever. So he has this very unique position, much like the Malach Yahweh of the Old Testament, where sometimes he received worship, sometimes he didn't. I once put this question to an Adventist minister I know. Now, he's a good friend, and he knows I was in a little mini debate with him. I asked him the question, if you think he's worthy of worship, why do you all make pictures of him? He says, well, we can make images of him in his humanity. And then as I went down the stairwell to the basement of that Adventist church, there was a giant poster, supposedly the Messiah, and he was floating in air and he was surrounded in light. I thought, that doesn't look very human to me. Maybe what we're dealing with is a bait and switch. Oh, we can make pictures of him because he was human. And then they proceed to make pictures of him that don't look anything human. He looks very superhuman. In fact, you can show me almost any picture of Christian art, and you'll be able to pinpoint who Yahshua is supposed to be real quick. If it's medieval art, he's got a sun disc around his head. If it's a modern piece of Christian literature, he'll just be the best Hollywood-looking man in the bunch. He'll have a distinctly Western European features, be very handsome. His beard will be trimmed to look very wise. He just looks like $1 million with interest in modern illustrations. Yet he was so common. His form was uncomely. He was unattractive. He was able to pass through crowds without them picking him out. He was so ordinary looking that Judas had to receive money to pick him out. They had a real hard time laying a hold of this guy. I'd like you to consider these things when it comes to images of Yahshua. If Yahshua is worthy of worship, images of him are out of order. If you purpose to illustrate him in his, quote, humanity, ask yourself how many humans really look like the image you have in mind. It is impossible to know exactly what he looked like. Now, I don't own this book anymore, but I had a book published by the Catholic organization which tried to explain the justification for this business. They said, well, Yahshua became a human. I guess it's possible to illustrate him as a human. What you'll find is around the world, people have appropriated him and made images of him that look like them. And I've seen all races. I even saw one that it was a woman, supposed image of Yahshua. It'll be very hard to capture exactly what they had back then. With very few exceptions, the images we see in commercial Christian art shows him as beyond human or utterly non-Hebrew. Now, I might have one more remark. Here we go. Now, suppose you want to put a picture of Yahshua on the wall of your home. I really don't think you ought to do that, but I'm going to ask you a question. In the Psalms, we are commanded to glorify a name. Praise his name. Psalm 68:4, extol him who rideth upon the heavens by his name Yah, and rejoice before him. The Psalms are jam-packed with commandments about honoring, worshiping his name. Yet in Psalm 96:5, it says, for all the Elohim of the nations are idols, but Yahweh made the heavens. So when you go to somebody's home and they got a picture of Yahshua on the wall, what does that look more like? Are we honoring Yahweh's name with that? Or does it look more like the Elohim of the nations are idols? I'm afraid that we are very visually oriented as a species. And we are drawn to pictures to help us crystallize our thoughts. Yahweh doesn't want that. He wants us honoring his name. Because when we honor his name, we honor him. Okay, the rest of this is going to go pretty fast. Topic number two, boy meets girl idolatry. I guess this is pervasive too. Well, men and women both want attention, don't they? And they want attention by the opposite gender, don't they? Our basic instincts crave to be noticed, appreciated, and loved. Is it possible to take this too far? Brother Jose, I'm going to go to the next slide, and I'm going to ask you to click on this. Not yet. This is a video of just an average girl passed through a beauty technician process. This became viral on the internet. I think some of you have seen this already. But we're going to talk about this. Click anywhere on it, and I think it'll run. Could you feed the video in, too? I mean the audio. Sorry. Yeah, unmute the laptop. See if the audio comes through. If not, we'll get by. Okay. So this film was made by the Dove Company. It's only 1 minute long. Starts with an ordinary girl, passes through this cosmetic process. What are they doing to her there? What's going on? We're going to watch it one more time with comment. So maybe, Randy, there's a chance to rescue this. Is there any audio coming through? Look at this. They photoshopped the girl. How many, let's have a show of hands. I don't do this too often. How many have seen this before today? Just Javon. Okay, so everybody had a bit of a surprise there. Okay. No wonder our perception of beauty is distorted. Every girl deserves to feel beautiful just the way she is. Okay, on the next slide, with or without, whoop. I'm on the next slide. We're going to see it again. It's only a minute long. And even if I don't have, the audio would be nice. Is it connected there? Okay. Well, I'll just comment on it. Okay, the producer of the film is actually dating the girl who's in here. So she already has a boyfriend. She doesn't need to be dolled up like this. She's looking kind of sad there, kind of downcast. But maybe that's for the before and after. But there she looks pretty good with a little smile. She actually flashes a really terrific smile, but the technician's hand is in the way. They put several layers on underneath. She's starting to look unhappy there. She doesn't look too happy in that moment. Then they take multiple shots. They pick the best one. They port it to a Facebook, and they start really distorting her to making her more attractive to some bizarre standard, and her face winds up on a billboard. This video went viral. If you want to find it for yourself, it's called Dove Evolution. And Dove had launched this initiative to get girls to start thinking in terms of beauty. Every girl deserves to feel beautiful just the way she is. They wanted to get girls to think about real beauty rather than this made-up stuff. Well, if you look on the left, the girl is kind of downcast. On the right, she has a little smile. Already she looks 100% better. I wish she'd come to the feast. I'd love to get to know her. She already had a boyfriend. She had no trouble attracting a guy. Men, which of these two ladies would you trust? That sweet lady on the left or this pile of plastic on the right? Which one do you think you could trust? I know the one on the right seems momentarily attractive. You know, there's moments like this when we're going to say things from the pulpit that we know are true. Just means somebody has to say them. Ever since I was a late teenager, all men that I bump into, at one point or another, it seems they always say something along these lines. Don't these girls know that they don't need all that makeup? It's funny because deep inside you want to be loved for who you really are. I don't know what it is. Women were taken from a concentration camp in Europe, emaciated, at the point of death. They were interviewed and asked, what do you want? And most of the time, they wanted makeup. What is it? Surely you want to be loved for who you are. So men, which of these two ladies would you trust? The sweet lady on the left or that pile of paint and makeup on the right? Okay, men, ladies, which of these two men would you trust? I got some stock photos there. Which of these two men would you trust? Those sunglasses give it away. You can't trust a guy who's wearing sunglasses, right? This is a pervasive problem. This is going to touch some nerves. This is actually image worship going in the both direction, idolatry in both directions. Girls who distort their appearance like this want the men to adore them. But that's because the women adore the men. There's a rock and roll song that goes, I want you to want me. So you get this boiling cauldron of desires governing people's actions. Nobody's thinking. Spirit-led is far from view. When men bulk up like that, not only are they seeking the adoration of women, but they also want the guys to adore them too. Let me make sure I didn't skip one. Yeah, here are selected verses from three songs from the rock and roll era. This is from Earth Angel, recorded by the Penguins. Earth Angel, the one I adore, love you forever and evermore. Then there's that song Blue Moons. Some numbskull is singing, he's worshiping the new moon, not the new moon, the blue moon. It's the full moon that occurs second time in a month. It's very rare to have two full moons in a month. So he's praying to the blue moon, and the verse says, and then there suddenly appeared before me the only one my arms will ever hold. I heard somebody whisper, please adore me. And when I looked, the moon had turned to gold. Man, that's chilling. And finally, Lionel Richie's hit song, You Are. You Are. You know, that bears a little kind of resemblance to the name of the Supreme Being, doesn't it? The verb for existence. Girl, I love you. There's no one above you. That right there, I turn it off. Okay. Girl, I love you. There's no one above you. You are the sun. You are the rain. I think Yahweh wants us to be ravished with each other's love when we fall into a pure boy-meets-girl relationship. But when those emotions start to displace Yahweh, it's gone too far. Deuteronomy 6:5, he says, "And thou shalt love Yahweh, thy Elohim, with all thine heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy might." That's the greatest commandment of all. Let me press on. I'm going to give you some warnings along these lines. Ladies, if you want your man to adore you, and you are successful in achieving that, he will come to hate you later. Actually, this happens a lot. There's a lot of times where people fall madly in love, they get married, then the glow of that excitement burns off, and then they're left having to reconstruct their relationship from scratch. And it's very hard, because if that relationship was built strictly on desire, when that burns off, they got nothing to stand on. The period of the romantic period is a time to build sentiment and emotional attachment, common interests and common goals. The same thing holds true in the alternate direction, men. If you're trying to get your wife to adore you, you're making a terrible mistake. You should be pointing the other to Yahweh. Your home should be a school of character development so that they see Yahweh through your sweetness and your goodness. Warnings. Evidence of adoration in a relationship is when compromise, experimentation, and moral impurity are encouraged. Yes, even married couples will be tempted to experiment with impure literature and media materials, damaging each other's conscience. You will never experience the intimacy you long for if you are dirtying up each other's conscience and making yourself rather than Yahweh the center of your relationship. By the way, short-term compromise will briefly hide this fact from you. The only reason people compromise is for some short-term gain. Let's talk about idols in the heart. You can see how this transitions nicely, doesn't it? Quite simply, the more you want something, the more it is an idol for you. Remember, first, that the essential meaning of covet is desire. Actually, it's okay to covet if it's the right thing. For example, "I covet your prayers" is a common expression. Let's see what Ephesians 5:5 says. "For this you know, that no whoremonger, nor unclean person, nor covetous man who is an idolater, hath any inheritance in the kingdom of Messiah and of Yahweh." This covetousness is a big, big deal. This unbridled desire that makes you an idolater. Idols in the heart is a concept that emerges in Ezekiel 14, verse 3 to 4. There's a stern warning at the end. "Son of man, these men have set up their idols in their heart and put the stumbling block of their iniquity before their face. Should I be inquired of at all by them? Therefore speak unto them and say unto them, Thus saith the sovereign Yahweh, every man of the house of Israel that setteth up his idols in his heart and putteth the stumbling block of his iniquity before his face and cometh to the prophet, I, Yahweh, will answer him that cometh according to the multitude of his idols." This is why I warn people, you should be discerning Yahweh's will by spiritual discernment, not by asking for signs. Because if you're blinded by an idol in your heart, you're going to get an answer within the context of the idol of your heart. That's no way to find out Yahweh's will. Going back to the previous section, you know, this boy meets girl stuff. I'm sick of hearing these stories of these boy meets girl situations, and they think it's the Almighty's will, and they're not thinking, they're experimenting, they're pushing the envelope. And after they get married, it blows up in their face. Before that, they thought it was Yahweh's will for them to get together. Then afterwards, they say, "I guess it wasn't." Yeah, note how someone in this trap will receive answers from Yahweh according to the multitude of his idols. One of my favorite passages was brought to remembrance by my friend Jose recently. In Luke 16:14, "And the Pharisees also, who were covetous," okay, that means they're idolatrous, "heard all these things which Yahshua had been saying, and they derided him. And he said unto them, You are they which justify yourselves before men, but Elohim knoweth your hearts, for that which is highly esteemed among men is abomination in the sight of Elohim. The law and the prophets were until John. Since that time the kingdom of Elohim is preached, and every man presses into it. And it is easier for heaven and earth to pass than one tittle of the law to fail. Whosoever put away his wife and marrieth another committeth adultery, and whoso marrieth her that is put away from her husband committeth adultery. Why did he tie that in? Because you know from Matthew and Mark that he was on to their game, putting wives away willy-nilly, passing them around. They were covetous. Let's build on some of those words. That which is highly esteemed among men is abomination in the sight of Elohim. We should think about that. How do we know if something's highly esteemed in the heart of men? Follow the money. Where's the big money? Yeah, where's the big dollars? Idols in the heart. I'm going to give you a word on sports. Put your mind at ease on this. Sports were an accepted part of Hebrew culture. Genesis 3:24 has Jacob wrestling with a man. In Ecclesiastes 9:11, Solomon says, I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift. Psalm 19:5 mentions a strong man running to a race. And then in 1 Corinthians 9 and Hebrews 12, we're encouraged to run this race. I think if sports were evil in Yahweh's sight, he wouldn't give those as examples, you know, of a good thing. But do these biblical examples now mean we should worship these overpaid clowns who dominate sports today? Trash-talking, cheating, unsportsmanlike conduct, fan adoration, corrupt referees. Sooner or later, their lifestyles come out. Does your appreciation of them cross into adoration? What is on your wall? What is on your heart? What's on their heart? Because it's going to come out sooner or later. If I take a kid to a pro-level game, when I'm with the child, I underscore the skill and discipline it takes to do those amazing things we see. And I'll point that out in detail. But I won't support the hero worship at any level. Their business is the result of marketing, manipulation, commercial advertising, packaging, and hype. Are we a holy people or are we not? I think it's possible to enjoy sports and learn from them. By the way, I prefer to see minor league teams when I go. But there are great object lessons to be learned from sports, as we see from the scriptures. But if you start liking them too much, it will be an idol in your heart. Again, Elohim knows your hearts. That which is highly esteemed among men is abomination in the sight of Elohim. We're almost done. Daily idolatry versus Yahweh's provision. All day long we are driven by desires, inclinations, and ideas which hinder our spiritual walk. We are drawn to these things because of how they make us feel. Artwork, relationships, provocative dress, ooh, look at me, entertainment, possessions, achievement, adulation of others, chemical stimulation through food, drink, drugs, and tobacco. To justify them, we will often grope for some biblical justification or human reasoning or even a private revelation, maybe a philosophy. Here are some things to watch for. One of them is openness. Whatever this thing is that you're wondering, is this an idol in my heart? Well, if you're striving to keep it a secret, you've probably got a problem. John 3:19 says, and this is the condemnation, that light has come into the world, and men love darkness rather than light, because their deeds were evil. For everyone that doeth evil hateth the light, neither cometh to the light, lest his deeds should be reproved. The next verse he says that if you're doing the right thing, you'll come into the light, so everybody can tell that what you're doing is in Elohim. Here's another thing to watch for. Does this thing that you are into cause division? James 4:1 reveals, from whence come wars and fightings among you? Come they not hence, even of your lusts that war in your members? If this thing you're wondering about in your life, if it's causing division, it's not from Yahweh. You'll know the strife, the contention. Here's some things to watch for in addition is, does this thing I'm wondering about, does it cause me to sin or compromise? I think that should be obvious. Any of these things could become an idol to you that I mentioned in that list a few pages back, but these are tip-offs that you're in a no-fly zone. You've got some idol in your heart that you're dealing with. I think I'm just about done. Here's some things to watch for. Yes, is it ruling you? If so, it must die. If it is ruling you. If you then be risen with the Messiah, seek those things which are above, where the Messiah sitteth on the right hand of Elohim. Set your affection on things above, not on things on the earth. For you are dead, and your life is hid with the Messiah and Elohim. When the Messiah, who is our life, shall appear, then shall you also appear with him in splendor. Mortify therefore your members which are upon the earth, fornication, uncleanness, inordinate affection, evil concupiscence, and covetousness, which is idolatry. There you go again. Now, I got these two verses on the last panel. You shall love Yahweh, your Elohim, with all your heart, all soul, and might. In Psalm 119:11, thy word have I hid in mine heart that I might not sin against thee. I'm going to put something out there I don't have in the notes. Wouldn't it be great for us to get excited about missionary work here in the States? Wouldn't it be great to get excited about missionary work overseas? I think it's possible to generate more excitement over what Yahweh does than any Xbox or sporting interest or anything like that. Couldn't we get excited about that? Those who go on the front lines and do Yahweh's work, they come back exhilarated. Maybe there is something here for us to get excited about in Yahweh's realm. Something that we can put in our hearts and delight in regularly. Well, Brother Javon, I'm done now. I'm going to ask you to come forward and continue as moderator. Please think on these things, brother. You've been very patient with me. Hallelujah.